Welcome to KXRW's Authenticity Matters, where we examine how to live more intentional, fulfilling lives by truly being ourselves. In each episode, we will talk to guests who've transformed their lives, organizations, and the community through authentic and intentional actions. I'm your host, Jen Coyne. Thanks for joining me for Authenticity Matters for the start of a new year. This month, I'll be talking to Dan Bramski, principal architect and owner of Bramski Studio Architecture. I'm excited to chat with him, not only because he's a great friend and a dynamic and engaging person, but also because I'm very interested in architecture. And for this show, to talk about expressing your authenticity through the space that you live and work in. Please join me in contemplating how and why we live in the spaces we do. I am just delighted to chat on, to have one of our chats that we have all the time, maybe with less swearing.
And now everyone's listening.
Everyone's listening to the conversations that we have and all the musings we have. So first of all, tell me a little bit about you and your background. Who are you?
So I grew up in Minnesota. I know, Jen, you're a fellow Minnesotan.
Yes, I am.
So I grew up with kind of a... I had like a very typical Midwestern upbringing, I always thought. The youngest of three children. My parents still live in the same house that we grew up in. My dad was a firefighter for the city of St. Paul. And my mom was a lunch lady for most of our childhood.
Your school or?
Yes, in my school district. So okay. She was at my elementary school and okay. Then she followed me to high school.
Of course she did.
I always had an in with the lunch ladies. It was really nice. When the leftover cart came around, you know whose table it went to.
Is this
first.
Why you're so tall?
You're well
nourished.
Yeah. So growing up, I was kind of a completionist kid. And I think that's a term I learned from you.
Maybe. I was like, what?
I was a youth group leader. I still am an Eagle Scout. We did lots of volunteering. That was definitely something my parents believed in. It's taken me into the last few years to realize how much my parents influenced me. And like I said, my dad was a firefighter. And so you'd work 24 hours on, 24 hours off. Oh, wow. So all the firefighters had these kind of second careers or hobbies. And so he worked construction on the side, and he was also, he's kind of a hobby machinist, was into restoring old tractors and things. So he was always kind of moving and fidgeting and fixing things and taking things apart. You know, I think our whole house was worked through.
Yeah.
through the 10, 15 years after my parents bought the house, it was just different things getting torn apart and rebuilt. And then my mom is just creative. She would always come up with, because, you know, when she was a lunch lady, all of her summers were off, but she would always come up with these really creative ways to engage us in activities. I think one of my favorite stories about her is the spring where she decided we could raise turkeys in the basement. So we got a big feeding trough and I imagine we brought home the eggs, and we had the heat lamps.
The incubator,
yes, thank you. And we watched these chicks hatch and eventually grow up. And then there was one day where we came home from school and we had not had anything over the top of the trough. And they had all gotten out. And so we spent the afternoon going to the far reaches of the basement, going underneath the stairs, I think some of them got into the floor cavity, into the walls, and we had to holler and bang on the walls to get them to come out. And then eventually, that probably May or June, we released them out into the wild.
Were they wild turkeys?
Yeah. And so that's probably the best way to describe my mom. She just wanted to do fun new things with us. And there were really no limits with her. She would just try something new. And I think that was really freeing.
Yeah.
And it helped with the creative process.
I'm I want to come back to that later on about talking about your new endeavor and, you know, how does that mentality play into it? But it kind of gives you a risk-taking foundation that it's okay to try stuff and maybe fail and have turkeys running around in your basement.
In your walls, absolutely. Yeah.
I want to tell the story of how we met because it comes back to this Minnesota heritage. And I really haven't talked much about my early years on the show at all. Not that we need to dig into my life, but that was one of our common things, right? So let's see. We met at the Hot Cake House down in Southeast Portland almost 5 years ago, I think, if I do the math right.
Maybe even longer.
Something like that. So around 5 years. And I remember I was wearing a shirt. Maybe you should tell it from your perspective.
You were wearing a silky short-sleeved blouse, and it had kind of a mid-century pattern of kind of softened squares with dots in them.
Yeah, it was like squiggles. Yeah, yeah. I had just come from an event, and so I was all dressed up. And I think I had had a couple cocktails and hadn't really eaten. And so I told Steven, I need something to eat. And so we went down to Hot Cake House and you were there with your husband. And
we were there mostly for the same reasons.
Yes. Soaking up the evening, basically.
Absolutely.
And I just remember you were looking over, and then I think after I checked out, you came over and you said something about my shirt. Then we got talking, and I know what it was. We figured out that we had a common love of mid-century.
Yes.
Architecture, mid-century style. And mid-century modern in particular, which is sort of what that shirt was. And I just remember that night I was like, we need to know each other. We need to be friends. And then the next day, I think I linked with you on Facebook and you were like, you're from Minnesota. Oh my God, I'm from Minnesota.
Well, you forgot to mention that we exchanged business cards.
Yes.
And you had your lovely Palm Springs rental.
Oh, was that
card.
The one that I gave
yes.
you? Too funny. Yeah.
Because I remember waking up in the morning, you know, picking up your card and I think texting you. And I'm pretty sure my husband was saying, like, don't be too much, Dan. Don't be too much. Just like chill. She's a random person. You met her at the Hot Cake House.
Right. I think that I'm glad that you were too much. I mean, that's what makes us close is that we're not. I think that there's never been a lack of authenticity. And so we've just like express what we're thinking and how we're feeling about stuff. So that's always been amazing. And, you know, there is that thing of coming from the Midwest, which if people, you know, aren't familiar with folks from like that area, people tend to be sort of guarded and close to the vest. I think, I can't remember if you said this before we were recording or not, but like, if you were going to cry in Minnesota as a kid, like you go to your room, you don't
go to your room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like people are much more close to the vest. And I remember talking to my cousin about this, that like we've gotten good at reading people because people are, you know, from where I'm from, don't express their emotions so outwardly. So you have to kind of figure it out. But I like that we're both just like, I love you, you know? It's a good feeling. It makes for a good relationship. So speaking of that, how do you define authenticity?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I've been thinking about that now for the last couple of days since you asked me. And I think it starts with being honest and truthful about who you are and what interests you. But I also think there's something about giving away a little bit of yourself, like putting yourself out there, being a little bit vulnerable, being at the Hot Cake House and just reaching out to that stranger with the right shirt.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where people, especially in my line of work, that's where I think people really bond and start that relationship of you put something out there about yourself and just share who you are.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if it's an imperfect part of you. I feel like part of my career has been becoming comfortable in my own skin, because for the first few years of your career, you're working for somebody else. You're trying to kind of fill this pristine image of an architect and a professional, and you kind of want to keep that professional distance. But at some point, to really connect with people, you have to be a little bit more open with them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I was telling my stepdaughter the other day, we were talking about decorating our houses, and her partner was saying something like, yeah, your place, you know, it's filled with things that are, really have a story and that are meaningful to you. And I was saying how when I started out on my own as a younger person, I really just role modeled what my mom did, and how I ended up sort of manufacturing what felt like how my living space was supposed to be. Eventually it was like, this doesn't vibe with me. You know, this isn't really what I like or how I like to have my house be. And I think, you know, we take that concept for granted a little bit. We don't really think about how we fall into the kind of spaces that we surround ourselves in. And I'm really intrigued to get deeper into the concept of thinking about, like, how do you help people design spaces to allow them to thrive more and be their authentic selves in the space that they're in? I know that I don't think people talk about that in that way all the time, but that's a really curious thing to me.
I think part of that in my own work with people is to just spend time getting to know them, to see their home, to see how they live, to see what's really important to them. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, almost ironically, the things that are most important to people, they actually can't verbalize because they just live it in their lives.
Right.
And they have to have somebody in their space to tell them, oh, that's really important to you, that the kitchen is the center of the household.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
that your bedroom is your escape from the world, or that you need to see your garden every morning when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
There are some architects in the world that are in here in Portland that are known for their aesthetic. They've created an incredibly unique aesthetic, and they become known for that, and people come to them because they want that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I think one is Wachter Architecture, and Ben has done an amazing job creating this aesthetic and this way of how a building should look and function. And I think I'm in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
My strength is really understanding people and what their vision for their world is and helping them manifest that. My work has, you know, involved, I've worked on a remodel of kind of a Tuscan villa in Lake Oswego. I did a lovely little historic beach cottage down in Nesquin. Right now I'm doing this uber modern ski house up on Mount Hood in Government Camp. And then sometimes we do, you know, like one of my favorite projects was this little Queen Anne porch that we added to this little Queen Anne that had never had a porch. And so it's fun for me too, because I get to go on these little vacations or tours to understand different aesthetics or different styles. And then how do we respond to that, you know, most appropriately. And then I think a lot of it too is just people need to slow down and think about what they like.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to show me images of their favorite spaces or their favorite objects. And then also, you know, think back to, there's a lot of projects that wind up going back to a favorite childhood memory of, my grandparents had this house and I loved it. And there was a Dutch door.
Yeah.
And I want a Dutch door. The Dutch door is a very common one.
Yeah.
I found. It's very homey. It's very idyllic.
Yeah. It conjures up some sort of a Sound of Music sort of vibe or something.
Yeah, there's the cooling pie.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on the ledge.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, before we all go bake a pie after that inspiration, let's take a break and recognize the sponsors that make this show possible. When we come back, we'll learn from architect Dan Bramski what motivated him to start his own firm after a successful career working for others, and how that was the right move for his authenticity journey. I'm Jen Coyne, and you're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis for 21 and over now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road off Patton Parkway next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is in the Heights Shopping Center. Ordering options include online, in-person, curbside, and express window touchless pickup to better serve you. Hours and more information available at craftcannabis.com.
A big thank you to Vancouver's own Kagan's Theatre for supporting our radio community. Our historic Kagan's Theatre has a long tradition of showing movies for our community, 85 years. Kagan's currently features first-run big studio and art house films along with classic movie revival. Check out their live events, and you can even book the theater for a private party or public event. Go to kagansthéâtre.com to see how you can rediscover the joy of going out for movie night again. Showtimes, booking information, and more at kagansthéâtre.com.
Welcome back to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm Jen Coyne, and today my guest is architect and owner of Bramski Studio Architecture, Dan Bramski. We've been talking about the process for determining what type of style and structure is right for people's homes and business spaces. I'm curious, too, about how Dan decided this was his life's work. Unlike many of our prior guests who have found their current calling later in their journey, Dan's path started much, much earlier.
How did you get here? Like, how did you become an architect? What, you talked about your early years with your parents, and you sort of got this like tenacity and construction and creativity from both of your parents. How did you decide that architecture was the thing you wanted to do?
I would joke that it was decided for me. So when I was very young, when we would go to the library, I would check out all of the plan books the home plan books. Mm-hmm. And I would pour through the pages and look at different plans. And then by second grade, I would sit and draw floor plans, especially during free time at school. And my second grade teacher, Mr. Brule, told me one day, I remember going over to his desk, or maybe he came over to mine. He's like, you should be an architect. And I had never heard the word before. We grew up in a pretty blue collar neighborhood. It was a foreign word to me. I said, okay, what's that? I said, you design buildings. I said, well, that sounds interesting. And that was 1994. And I think in second grade, I just thought, okay, well, this is what I'll be. Mm-hmm. It always seemed to fit.
Yeah.
I took drafting classes in my high school. Great industrial tech teacher there who kind of encouraged me to go off on my own. I actually won a grand prize ribbon at the Minnesota State Fair.
Wow.
Little known fact.
Minnesota State Fair is great, by the way.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's the one reason we still go back. Well, and to see mom and dad, too, of course. It came time to graduate, and I was a swimmer, mm-hmm. and the University of Minnesota had a great swim team, Big Ten, Division I, and they had an architecture program, and it was 45 minutes from home. And my older sister, whose footsteps I always followed in, mm-hmm. I followed her to the university and, you know, engaged in being a swimmer on the swim team and architecture. Nice. Studied architecture, graduated, and then a couple years later, I applied for grad school and wound up coming out to Oregon. I had a couple professors that I really respected and appreciated the work they did and also just their kind of demeanor, and they had gone to U of O, and so I went to U of O. That was the next step, and that was also kind of an excuse to leave the Midwest and see a little bit of the world.
Yeah.
I think I'm one of the first people in three generations of my family to leave Minnesota.
Wow.
Since they came over from the old country. And Eugene was great. I think this also ties into, it was one of the places where I came into my own self,
mm-hmm.
because I was now 2,000 miles away from home, kind of understanding, and I got to kind of shake off the things that weren't important to me.
Right.
I got to choose how I defined myself. Because I was no longer Dan Abrahamson from Oakdale.
Yeah.
I was almost kind of this stranger in a new land. And that was a pivotal moment into kind of refining who I was and also mm-hmm. probably being a little bit more authentic
yeah.
about
yeah.
you know how I live my life.
It's like an elimination diet. It's like you're starting from scratch. So like, what are you going to add back? You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want to have?
And then I graduated from U of O back in 2012, and I got a job with a wonderful firm down in Eugene, and I worked there for 4 or 5 years. And I think of that architect as kind of my dad in the architecture world, because I walked into his office really not knowing anything about how professional practice worked.
Yeah.
And he taught me the ropes from how do you draft a set, you know, a drawing set, to how do you work with clients? How do you communicate with them? How do you get through the permit review process?
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, that was a wonderful experience. And then at some point, I had met my husband and I had married him at this point, Andrew, in case he's listening.
He will be. He listens to community radio.
So. He does.
Yes.
At that point, we wanted a new adventure. And so we moved up to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job with a very similar firm.
Mm-hmm.
A small group of tight-knit people, similar project styles, really great client base.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, 40 years of just pretty much referral-only based work.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just continued my learning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't become licensed until just before I moved up to Portland. And there's something about – so when you start working in an architecture firm – you actually still have to go work for at least another 3 to 4 years, and then you have to go through a series of tests,
mm-hmm.
Which on average take about 2.5 years. I think that's the current statistic for how long it takes just to get through the testing. So you work essentially for somebody else until you get your stamp, and then you get your architect stamp. And that's for architects and engineers and other design professionals, that's kind of the moment. That's
anybody
the rite
that's
of passage.
That's anybody that's licensed. It's so funny you're talking about this. I'm like, this feels like a parallel as starting out as an accountant, right? I mean, you had to go 2-3 years worth of experience and taking tests before you could ever hang a shingle out. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It is. And it's, yeah, so it's the rite of passage. And I remember passing that final test and getting the result and thinking, I never have to go to school again. I'm now an adult. I don't have to go back and study for any other test or go into a Prometric testing center again. And it's weird because it also channeled back these feelings of graduating college and graduating high school and kind of all those moments of achievement in the past.
We think we never have to take a test again, but like then you realize that every day the life is the test and there's these other choices that you have to make, right? As you're trying to figure out your path, you know, do you work for someone else for the rest of your life or do you branch out on your own? You know, what, you know, when I left big corporate job, like it, on the one hand, it was just this organic process where all of a sudden I was like, I think I'm just going to try something on my own for a while. To then becoming like, wow, no, this is my path. This is where I need to be, and this is a choice that I'm making to, you know, maybe forego things like income potential on the short term for carving out your own path. I don't know. That's like it might not be in a Prometric testing center, but it is a test.
And it's harder too because there's not necessarily a clear path forward.
Right.
We don't know what the right answers are. We find them.
Well, and
or we find the wrong answers and we go the other way.
Exactly. You make your mistakes. And I think it's also that thing of like, wow, you know, you wake up in the morning and you aren't accountable technically to anybody. I mean, once you have clients, you're accountable to your clients, but you're like, well, I could just sleep in today. I don't have to make myself get up and do this business, but you're compelled. And so that's where I find that has for me been about how I've developed a sense of purpose and passion is that what's making me get up in the morning. It's not somebody else telling me I have to. It's what I get to go do.
I agree. I look at it as finding that one thing that you really love about your job and seeking that out.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's to me, design is just the reduction of all unnecessary items. Mm-hmm. And so I love refining things and drawing things and just problem solving and playing around with things.
Yeah. I'm curious, when you came, when you left school and you passed your test right before you moved up here, did you at that time, did you feel like in your own skin, or did you feel like you're still learning and developing like your own thing? And when is that point when you kind of got there, or are you there yet?
I'm there and I'm not there. I would say that once I moved to Portland and started working for a firm up here, there was an adjustment period of just learning how do things work in Portland? Mm-hmm. You know, what, because they were different. From Eugene, there were different players in the field, and there were all these different things to focus on that I could potentially focus on. And so after a few years, I just realized who I liked working with, what mm-hmm. sorts of projects I like to work on. Eventually, you begin to have repeat clients or referrals to other mm-hmm. clients. And then COVID hit. Mm. And particularly for me and my husband, COVID was very interesting because, number one, we started working at home for the first time. I was no longer in a studio environment next yeah. to my colleagues. And so for better or for worse, I started working on a lot of projects on my own. Mm. And because I would sometimes have somebody else in the office work with me on design, but it's just hard to do when you're not sitting next to each other.
Right.
I believe in that true studio environment of going back and forth all yeah. day long, asking each other questions, telling each other jokes. And just when you go off and design in a vacuum, that's when the design really doesn't advance. Mm-hmm. And then also, my husband and I adopted our two sons, Daniel and Derek, who are now 10 and 14. They moved in June of 2020. So we also became parents to, not to infants, but to partially formed young human beings who have yeah, a whole yeah. life behind them. And we're all stuck together. We're in this new world. And then, of course, 2020, there were so many times where I remember sitting down to talk with our boys, just saying, I haven't been through this before, mm-hmm. but for example, there's wildfires in Clackamas County and we're at a level one evacuation. I don't think our house is going to burn down, but just in case, right. I want you to know and that we might have to leave. And then there was the ice storm and we yeah. had a foot of snow. And then there was, you know, January 6th at the Capitol.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what to do. I turned on the TV at lunch. I said, well, we can sit here and watch this because I don't know what else to do. But I yeah. think this is a part of American history. So it's just been this shell shock of a year and a half mm-hmm. of everything. But then it also taught me that I could work on my own.
Yeah.
And yeah. that I could run things on my own. And similar to the hotcake house story, mm-hmm. over the years, you know, as my loving husband does, I've sat with him and said, you know, it'd be cute to have my own little firm
yeah.
one day. It'd be fun just to do my own thing. And it's always been this little, you know, back of mm-hmm. my head idea that I would mention after a cocktail or two. And then it was really nothing more than that. And my mind just caught up in the last year saying, actually, you're doing so much on your own. You have certain projects that you like to work on. You know, you're doing a great job of serving your clients and producing a quality product. And you like working from home and you actually want to be home with your kids now.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason to be home. Of mm-hmm. course, I've always wanted to be home with my husband. But now there are two more reasons to be home. And now right. we have Kiki the cat too.
Yeah,
so there you
she's
go.
She's great.
And it was so funny. I kept thinking to myself, this is probably one of the most challenging times of your life. It's the most chaotic time of your life in what's a very chaotic time in the world. Mm-hmm. And you want to go out and just start your own thing. But I kept running it back and back through my head, and it just always made sense. I said, yeah, like, I think now's the time to jump and to try something new. Mm-hmm. And then you might ask me this, but I'll jump into it. You know, how did I define what I wanted to do or who I wanted to work with?
Right,
or,
right.
It was interesting because I'd always been a part of, you know, reputable firms with great, you know, stellar reputations, great, you know, award-winning projects with people who really cared. Mm-hmm. And so how did I that was a part of this process,
right?
Of determining, okay, what do I stand for?
Yeah.
And my husband works for Planned Parenthood, and they have this these wonderful service standards, and they actually go back to them anytime they make a decision. If it's a very small, mundane decision, they go back to their service standards.
It's like values,
and,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think they have values, and they all feed into each other, but they're right. present in their work every day. And that really struck me.
Yeah.
So, okay, like how do we connect all everyday decision back to these overarching values
right.
that make us different and that allow us to do what we do? And so I thought about those, and my previous firm, the big term there was trusted advisor. We want to mm-hmm. be the trusted mm-hmm. advisor for our clients, because especially my clients are building a house for the first time, or mm-hmm. they're doing a massive remodel or addition, or they own a business and this is the first time they're occupying a building or building a building or remodeling
right.
it, or
right.
they're opening a new restaurant and they need somebody there to guide them along the mm-hmm. way, to help them to be the cheerleader,
yeah.
to make it happen. You know, I have to use my expertise to get them through it.
Right. Right.
And realize, you know,
reduce the
product.
Friction in the system. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's just a lot of unknowns. And so I focus on kind of being the trusted advisor, really advocating for them,
mm-hmm.
and then just to bring simplicity to a project.
Right.
You know, beautify a design, see their vision, but to help them refine it and bring it into their means, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, the timeline or the budget or the scope of work.
Yeah.
Talking today to Dan Bramski, architect and owner of Bramski Studio Architecture. We've just been talking about the process he went through to decide to take that leap and start his own firm. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about how Dan manages to stay true to himself while also supporting the design of a space that's authentic to his clients. I'm Jen Coyne, and you're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM.
Programming like this is brought to you through the generous support of our founding sponsors at ADCO, Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at adco1.com. That's adco1.com.
Thanks to our wonderful sponsor, Carpet City of Vancouver, for their generous support to local radio. Carpet City of Vancouver has a wide selection of floor coverings for every home or business. Carpet City of Vancouver carries carpet, hardwood, laminate, stone, tile, and also countertops. Whether you need replacement flooring or are looking for a first-time installation on a new property, Carpet City of Vancouver can handle the job in a professional, knowledgeable, and timely manner. Located on Highway 99 at 9013 Northeast Highway 99. More information available at carpetcityofvancouver.com. Welcome back again to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm Jen Coyne, and today we're talking about authentic spaces. Architect Dan Bramski is my guest, and next we're going to discuss designing a space to support how you live in your own authentic ways, as well as how he keeps true to himself and his values in the process.
How do you facilitate this process, and that you think your secret sauce is sort of really digging in and getting to know that person and their authenticity, and sort of then designing a space for them that reflects that? Does it ever come at odds to your own aesthetic or your own authenticity? Or do you make sure that you kind of know up front when you have a client that, like, it jives with you?
Great question, because that is one of the biggest things that, of course, we don't get taught in school. But you have to learn who your client is and really read them to figure out what their motives are.
Right.
And, you know, I'll bring up an example of one gentleman, Sean, who got referred to us by a contractor. And we heard, oh, there's this guy, Sean. He's got a building down in the Southeast Foster neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Foster Powell neighborhood.
Faux Po,
yes. And he needs a change of occupancy. And then I got the building report, and I said, I just don't know about this guy. I'm gonna call him and have a conversation mm-hmm. with him just to figure out who he is. Because I thought he might just be trying to flip a building. Right. He might be trying to do something a little bit on the sly. It seemed like it was a very budget-oriented project. Mm-hmm. So I called Sean up, and I said, hey, I'm Dan. I'm an architect. I'm talking to so-and-so. And they gave me your name, and it sounds like you've got a project. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about it? Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? He said, well, there's this building. It's built in 1928, and we're calling this the Mrs. Noble Project. I said, oh, yeah. He said, we got the original plans to the building, and the plans were drawn for a Mrs. Noble. It just mm-hmm. says that on the title mm-hmm. block of the drawings. And it's this little two-story mixed-use building, and he started researching Mary Noble, and she was probably one of the first female property developers in Portland.
Interesting.
And he was entranced by the story of this building had sat and had been really just neglected over the last 100 years. It was preservation through neglect.
Right.
Nobody cared enough to change anything right. to it.
That's like the whole city of Palm Springs was for a while.
Exactly. Right? Yes. It was just more layers of paint and carpet and that mm-hmm. 60s wood paneling. We pulled off yards and yards of that. He said, I have a vision where I'm going to move my law office in there. I'm going to have other local tenants move in. Mm-hmm. We want to put a little cafe down on the front corner, and we just want to contribute back to this environment because we live in the neighborhood and we care. And then I think I went on LinkedIn and I noticed he's a member of his neighborhood association, and he's also a board member at Restore Oregon.
And you were like, ding, ding.
I'm a volunteer with Restore Oregon, and I'm also the chair of my neighborhood association. And I just thought, okay, this isn't some flipper. This is a guy clicks. Who cares.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he also turned out to be the most wonderful client.
And so is this development finished now?
It's finished. It was finished late in 2020, and it actually received a DeMuro Award from Restore Oregon.
Awesome.
And it's just a lovely little building at the corner of 63rd and
Foster.
Does
it have a cafe? That's my question.
It is. It's actually, I might be.
I'm like, now I don't want to make a after this story, claim. I want to go there.
It is. It's called Hemp Bar, and it is the first Amsterdam-style CBD bar.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, it's just this lovely little cafe right on the street corner. And then there's professional offices on the second floor.
Very cool.
And it's a wonderful little building. And now it's one of the best parts about it was getting a brand new paint job. It's just this like light, crisp blue mm-hmm. with a white base on it and yellow doors. And it's just cheery.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So that's one of those times where, I called a potential client, and you have to read them and understand what's mm-hmm. important to them. And then on the flip side, there have been some clients where you realize that your values are not aligned. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that leads to a tough conversation of, you know what? I don't think I'm right for you. I don't think mm-hmm. we're clicking, and I don't think I'm giving you the service that you want. And I just have to leave this project.
Yeah.
But then sometimes there are clients who are kind of in the middle where you can help. For example, in terms of sustainability.
Yeah.
You can push everybody a little bit. Mm-hmm. So anytime we're building a new roof, we're designing a new roof, I am going to ask the client if they want to put solar on.
Yeah.
And then that determines the pitch of the roof, the slope, or the mm-hmm. orientation of the roof. And at a very minimum, I go and get them an estimate from a solar installer just to say, I know you might not want to do this, but it's on me as the architect to at least show you the numbers and say, this is what's possible.
Yeah.
Because it's part of it as a financial conversation.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating because I remember, as we were building our business and going through a process and we were considering B Corp certification. And, we're like, hey, we want to be triple bottom line. We want to support the planet. And, I got nudged through Michael Jonas, who we know mm-hmm. in common and has been on the show. Like, he's a big advocate of Benefit Corporation for Good. So, took the test, passed that. And, now every year as we recertify, it has set something in motion. Because of that influence that now we're considering, we just bought a thermal printer and it doesn't use ink and it's more, cost effective, and it's this and it's that, you know, so it hits all, ticks all the like triple bottom line things. Little decision, but it is those little things. And so if you can nudge somebody, and just by asking a question, like, have you considered this? You know, you can make a big difference over time, because then it gets that person thinking about stuff every day.
Yeah. And I had the same, because I think you were the one who told me about benefit corporations for good.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to work my way through the list of questions.
Yeah.
It'll happen someday. But, you know, one thing that really stood out to me on that was, do you return calls or emails to your clients within
24 hours? Yeah.
And it's funny because that's always been kind of a loose value in my head, but I'd never pulled it out of my head to talk about it with anybody or to formalize it into some sort of policy.
Right.
So wonderful things like that, they're just, yeah, helping you.
It crystallizes, and it is something that's coaching you in a direction. And yeah, it's, so now it's about, oh, now you're really articulating your customer service values, and that's a piece of what do you want your working relationship to be like? Because I think it's a give and take. Like, you want to be responsive, but you also want your client to be responsive too. You know, so it sets an expectation of what you're getting into.
Exactly.
Yeah. Really interesting. So I'm curious about the process you go through to help somebody identify what their own authentic space should be like.
Well, at first, it always starts with a site visit in person, especially for residential work.
Yeah.
I want to see how they live, where they live. For example, I have one.
So you go like where they're at now, even if like they're building a new home, would you go to their existing residence?
Yes. Or if they want to change the house, just to see how they've been living in it and what's important to them. For example, I have one client who, it wasn't until I stepped into her house that I truly understood her use of space. Mm. She likes to collect things, and she makes very efficient use of space. For example, one of my favorite experiences was going into her bathroom. It's about 2.5 feet deep and about 5 feet long, and it has a custom little tile shower, a little European toilet, and a tiny little vanity. And there's all these little shelves and nooks, and she has all of her perfumes and skincare things arranged around. And it's the way I describe it, you would think it's a hoarding situation, but it's not. Mm-hmm. She just loves to make, because she has a 500 square foot house, and so she makes use of every little inch. And it's all clean and neat and organized. It's just this little menagerie.
Yeah.
And that was one of those points where I realized, oh, I should have been in her house earlier, because now I totally, because we're designing a new ADU for her. And she just gets, she gets into all the dimensions down to an inch, which is really surprising to me, because I have other clients who are, you know, if we get things within 6 inches to a foot, you know, things feel cozy.
Right.
And correct.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and then a part of that too is asking them to share photos, you know, for example, Houzz and Pinterest are great things to share. Yeah. I feel like some clients have maybe even shared, well, the one house I added on to in Nesquin, it is one of the historic cottages in Nesquin, and the owners showed me a book because their house is pictured in it. It's all about this cute, beautiful little cottage with this bright blue door. And that was something that made sense to them. They said, this is a part of historic Nesquin.
Yeah.
And if we screw this up, they're going to tar and feather us and run us out of town. And so just kind of unpacking that and getting to know them and just, you know, learning what's their story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, is this family land? Have they been here for a while or did they come? Or especially, I love working with people that have come from outside of the US or other cultures, because there's other notions about how spaces function.
Yeah.
Or how spaces connect to each other, or what a bedroom is, or what a living room is. And then also, you know, we have to ask the questions about the future. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be here in 5 years? Is this the forever house?
Right.
Or is this to have the kids grow up in, and then at some point you're going to leave?
Yeah.
You know, going back to that house in Nesquin, that's a legacy project for that couple.
Yeah.
They want their 4 children and their grandchildren to be here after they're gone. And this is going to be the family gathering place.
Yeah.
Because that wife is a fifth generation Neskowinian.
That sounds about right.
We'll go with that. I won't try to up that. Yeah. Just trying to get in their minds. And then the more they tell you, and then you have to just learn to probe more and more.
It's interesting because, you know, I've remodeled some houses. I'm like a total, you know, armchair architect designer person. But certain choices, you go, they seem like a big deal at the time. And there's like big financial consequences. So we were picking countertops as we were remodeling our house. And I really was like, I want this Labradorite slab. And it was outrageously expensive, but it was gorgeous. And I was just like, I want this in my life every day. I want to see this every day. And it seemed really important. And ultimately, we didn't pick it because we became concerned that they were going to cut the sink out of like the best part of the countertop, right?
Yeah.
Like the really beautiful piece of it was not going to be shown. So we picked something that was more uniform, similar, but like not maybe as fantastic, but like way more budget friendly. And I'm curious, how do you help people stay grounded of as far as like these little teeny choices, how much do they matter? Because people can get very stressed out by making all of these design decisions. And it's kind of like some of this doesn't, like 2 years from now, you're not going to care.
It's funny because we actually went through this in our own kitchen remodel. My husband and I did. So we were remodeling our kitchen several years ago. It was important to us because it was kind of the first space. I mean, we realized in that moment that we live in the kitchen.
Center of your house, yeah.
And the dining room. We had opened up the wall between the living room and the dining room. Mm-hmm. And so we were reviewing cabinetry drawings from the cabinet maker. And we were going through these little details. It was probably midnight on like a Tuesday night. We're both tired. My husband's sick of having cooked on the Instant Pot in the garage in the middle of winter for the last 3 months. And we were talking about this. Some little detail. I don't even remember what detail it was. I think it was maybe how like a door slid or something. And I realized in that moment that I had never, I now am calling it the 5% talk or the 95% talk, where you can drive yourself crazy with all of the little details, but 2 years from now, it's going to be perfect. And in every project, I would say once you get to 90 to 95% of that perfect design, you let go.
Yeah.
And that last 5%, something is probably not going to be the way you want it to be.
Right.
But you're going to forget about it. Because once you finally occupy that space, you're in love with the 90 to 95% of things that did go right, that you got a say in, that you created or you designed or helped design.
Right.
And so it's hard too, because a lot of times this might be somebody's forever house and they want everything to be perfect.
Yeah.
But at some point, for your own sanity, you have to let go and leave it up to the cabinet maker to make the right detail, or allow the carpenter to figure out which trim goes where.
Right. You're the professional. Just do the thing. It's so interesting because I was thinking about this past weekend. I went to the TWA Hotel in New York, which is an architecturally significant location, terminal built by Aerosarinen back in 62, I think. And look it up online, TWA Hotel. It's an amazing design, just like the restoration project or preservation. It was kind of a mix of both, I think. Amazing project. What's interesting to me is I was struck by how they did think about every little detail. Like there's a lot of circles all over the place. And so there's this circular soap dish in the bathroom. And then they had TWA soap that was designed round to fit into the dish, right? Mm-hmm. So there's these little touches you do notice. However, like I loved it, loved the place, loved the experience. There was no closet to put your clothes in the bedroom. And that became an annoyance the entire weekend because it was two women sharing a room. You know, we were going out to Manhattan where we had dresses. We were just like, I can't believe there's like this weird place to hang a few things, but there's no real place to store your clothes. And I was like, that was kind of a screw up, you know? And so that's the other thing, is like, they're worrying about the like 5%, like, let's make sure we get the soap dish just so with the soap, and that's great. But like, you didn't put a closet.
You missed the closet, guys.
Yeah. And so I think that comes back to like knowing your client and what's important to them, and making, you know, if somebody's a clothes hound, like, you better put in a giant walk-in closet and a space or something like that. Like, you really have to know how people are going to live. This is where I come back to authenticity. If they're not, they're telling you what they think their place should be like, or, you know, or telling what you think they think you want to hear, or being overly guided by how you live, your bias about that, then they're not going to get the space that is going to work for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it is about psychology. It is about, everything is about digging in and figuring out what is going to be sustainable for someone.
This is your house. This is,
yeah,
you get to create this. And if you really just want that diamond window in the mm-hmm. middle of your roof, go for it. I'll design it. I'll detail it. We'll make it happen.
Yeah. So you started your own place.
Yes, I did. So Bramsky Studio Architecture opened a few months ago.
Yeah.
And like any other young business owner, I feel like I'm in this little boat out there on the ocean, just waiting for things to settle. But I know the waves are never going to settle.
Right.
I'm just going to get better at surfing.
Yeah, for sure.
Or standing upright in the boat. And so I've been now focusing on, I'm continuing to work on custom residential mm-hmm. projects. So new builds, remodels, additions. I work in Oregon and Washington.
And like from the coast to the mountains, basically, or yes. Bend? Like how far, what's your reach?
I think the farthest I've gone east is Bend. But mm-hmm. yes. And then, you know, I work down in Eugene sometimes. And of course, on my recent trip to Palm Springs, I thought, oh, you should just get licensed down here, because there's so much, there's so many wonderful things happening in that little
for sure.
patch of desert.
Yeah, it's great.
I enjoy smaller commercial projects too. Right now, I've got a little frozen yogurt shop that's really fun. Starting to work on a restaurant out at the coast and some offices for a construction company. So I do that. It's fun to bounce back and forth between things like that.
Yeah. So if someone was interested to work with you, how do they reach you?
Well, you can check out my website. It has a contact form. That's just mm-hmm. Bramsky, B-R-A-M, as in Mary, S-K-E.com. I've got a portfolio there, so you can kind of see what I do, what I work on. And it is eclectic. To me, it's just evidence of me helping clients figure out their own brand, their own way of living, what makes sense to them.
Yeah.
And then you can contact me on there. I love to meet with clients in their space. I always call it the big hand waving session, where we walk around the space and we're like, oh, this could be that and this could be there. And we just kind of let all of these ideas, you just kind of vomit all mm-hmm. these ideas out. And then you just start to kind of sew pieces together and mm-hmm. figure out what sticks and what's not important, and maybe what misconceptions they have or what misconceptions I have about the way they live.
Yeah.
And then you go from there, and then we just engage in a design process together. And I also really like to help people find contractors, because I love to bring whoever's going to build
your partners with you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I want them to be part of the project, because I don't want to get through designing something and then have them say, hey, Dan, I wouldn't have designed it this way. It's going to be a heck of a lot easier if we build it this way.
And you're a partner throughout the process. I mean, you're not just like, hey, drawing something up and just dumping it. Like,
nope. I help them engage, you know, interview the contractor, engage in those mm-hmm. conversations. I, you know, I go through the permitting process mm-hmm. and then I'm there to answer questions during construction. Because especially with existing buildings, you're never, ever going to find out everything about the building until you're in the middle of demo.
Opening things up.
Uh-oh, that's there. Oh, we thought that was going to be there, and it's not.
Yeah.
And then we get to see it all the way through. And the best part is when you casually visit them a year after they've been living or occupying the new space. Or if I get to go to dinner there with my husband or something.
Right.
And just be in that space and see how it works, how it functions.
Very cool. So if you're interested in contacting Dan, reach him at bramsky.com, bramsky.com. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I get to talk to you, and I'm so thrilled to call you my friend, but I am really excited about your new venture, and you know, how authentically you are moving forward with your life and your work and your career. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I feel the same way about you. And I think conversations like this are incredibly important, especially right now during COVID, where we don't get to have these informal, friendly conversations. Yeah. And you get out of your mind space of being at work or being a husband or being a dad. And you just get to talk about those things that really keep you up at night.
Exactly.
The things that excite you about life. So thank you.
It's been so great to talk about one of my interests, architecture, with someone who's an expert in the field. I want to thank Dan Bramski for sharing his perspective and his ideas on design decisions with us. Before we close the show, let's hear again from sponsors that make this show and station possible. You're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM.
Domestic violence is not okay, and it's on the rise, especially now during this time of COVID-19. Domestic violence comes in many forms, such as physical abuse, verbal, financial, sexual, stalking, and technological abuses. If you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship, we can help. The Vancouver Police Department and the YWCA are here for you. You are not alone, even in this time of crisis. You can call the YWCA at 360-695-0501 or call 911 for the police. You can also find helpful information about the Safe Choice Domestic Violence Program at ywcaclarkcounty.org and in Portland at ywcapdx.org.
KXRW would like to thank Kraft Cannabis for supporting our radio community. Kraft Cannabis, for 21 years and over, now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road off Patton Parkway, next to Home Depot. At this location, they offer Top Shelf Tuesday, Waxy Wednesday, and Stony Sunday specials. The Mill Plain location is in the Height Shopping Center with Munchy Monday and Shatterday specials. Ordering options include online, in-person, curbside, and express window touchless pickup to better serve you. Hours and more information available at craftcannabis.com.
Join me next time to hear more authenticity journeys on Authenticity Matters. This is KXRW 99.9 FM.